Namo Buddha, Namo Dhamma, Namo Sangha. Namo Buddha, Namo Dhamma, Namo Sangha. The main point of Buddhist meditation is to develop insight, a liberating insight. Mental calm is helpful for that. Not absolutely necessary, but it is difficult to develop insight without mental calm. However, to calm the mind and to enter the dhyanas is not liberating in itself. It is just a nice break. So, we need to understand what's going on. We need to understand what we experience, how life is. A liberating understanding, liberating us from that grasping which creates dukkha. We're not talking about the liberation from the conditions of this world. Also, a Buddha, when he or she walks, then when walking into a thorn, there will be pain, right? But there will be no drama around the pain. And whenever an awakened person comes to a hot country, will also sweat, right? We'll feel it's hot, right? But there's no drama. Okay, this no drama is the end of dukkha dukkata. Yeah, it's the end of the suffering upon suffering. But the unpleasant or the challenging conditions of this world, they will not change with liberation. But the drama will stop. And the drama stops because we look through the experiences. We see that in that what we cling to because we think it's agreeable, there's nothing to hold on to. And that what we fight, there is no substance whatsoever. We are fighting mirage. We are fighting projection. All of that is so because of the nature of change, the nature, the dynamic nature of appearances. So an awakened person sees through that changing nature and sees through also the whole process of perception, you know, who we are ourselves. This is the third kind of dukkha, the third kind of suffering. Is due to clinging to this, what we call the skandhas. It's just aggregates. I briefly remind you how this teaching about these aggregates came about. The Buddha was sitting in a forest, and some woodcutters had cut logs, and they had stored the logs inside of the Buddha. And at that time, when sitting there, the Buddha was asked by a person, how about the self? Is there an Atman? Is there a self? The Buddha said, well, you cannot really say there is no self or there is a self. It's more like with those locks over there. And kanda or skanda means heap. It's with this heap, like with this heap over there. It's made up of locks, you know, and actually the way we function is also made up of aggregates. Basically, there are these five aggregates of perceiving forms, of having sensations, feeling tones in connection with what we perceive, to distinguish them, to be able to name them, distinguish them from each other, then to have all kinds of mental reactions connected to that, some of them wholesome, some of them unwholesome, and this produces lots of different states of consciousness. Now, with each of these different aspects of being, you can identify, you can think it's solid, but none of this is actually a me, a self. It's like with those logs. You know, if you put five logs, you have a heap of five. But each of these logs, you can peel it apart. You know, it's made out of, you know, cells, actually. It's made out of wooden, how to say, fibers. So, like this, when you look into the functioning of any sentient being, you find it's made up of many forces, many, you can say, many ways of functioning, forces which interact, which lead to a perception and then to the next one, and lead to sensations, that means to feelings about that, lead to reactions. And all of this seems to be so real, but basically, take those logs over there, you know, it's just heaps of different forces, and they all change. Like these logs, they will not be there in 100 years, you know, they will all, even if we do nothing about them, they will all disintegrate. If you put a fire, it's quicker. And that's the Buddha's answer to the skandhas, and this is our basic identification. We think because we are sitting here with a form, because we perceive, because we think about what we perceive, because we have emotions, then different states of experience, of consciousness, we think we exist. This is very normal, yeah, it's very normal, but it's just changing phenomena, actually. Coming together for some time and changing as we go along. It's always... So this Tilman, which I was, if I showed you a photo of how I was when I was born, you wouldn't know that who this guy is, although he's sitting in front of you and thinks he is still this one. But he's not. Changing all the time. It's the same for you. We're changing. But we are not changing completely, because the conditions are such that from yesterday to today, we haven't changed so much. We can recognize each other. There's a continuity of forces, which makes that for as long as we are in this body, the changes are gradual, so that we usually recognize each other the next morning, usually. We might not recognize each other after 30 or 40 years, like the people I went to school with. I'm not sure I would recognize them on the street. I've changed a lot. When we come together, we have to introduce ourselves. Remember, I'm this guy. You beat me on the head, you know? So, change, when we see the change in nature, it doesn't mean that we are ignorant of the stability. There is a stability for as much as conditions don't change so quickly, right? For when conditions remain quite stable, there is a sufficient continuity for this wall, and even the curtain in front of it is sufficient stability to probably be there if there's no fire and nothing else still next year. But it will have changed in a subtle way. And at some point you have to change the curtains, you know, because the change is just too much. Or they will fall down by themselves. So this is a nice way of looking at life. It's a way of knowing change, and then the understanding that we are going for the insight in meditation is not only about the fact of change, but it is about the forces that create the change. We also want to understand life. We want to know what makes our world, yeah? What makes our world be the way it is? And there we come into touch with the creative power of mind. That we are each sitting here, seemingly in the same hall, but we all sit in a different hall. We all sit in a different experience right now. Your experience and your neighbor's experience and my experience, although we are so close to each other, it's not the same. I don't really know what you are feeling. We have an overlapping sensory input. We have something which is similar, but then each one is having a different body already. Each one had a different night, a different sleep, and so on. We have a different upbringing. We have different preferences. Wow, and with all of that here in the room, we have just as many different worlds here in this room as there are people in this room. And if we have an ant crawling around, it will have a very different experience from us. So this we also need to look through. Not only that there is nothing permanently solid, we also need to look through the forces which create our perception of the world. So we look into cause and effect. If I look with this attitude, with this motivation, I see that. Partnerships are beautiful examples. You know, when you fall in love, you have a certain way of looking. At the moment of divorce, you have a different moment of looking. Yeah, it's like, hasn't changed so much. It can only be a few years in between, you know, but very different way of perceiving the world. Very different. Or to put it yet another way, two people come for a retreat and they're being shown the retreat rooms. Well, everything there what you need. There is a bed, there is a chair, there's a cupboard and a window. One person walks in and says, "Oof, this looks like a prison cell to me." And the next person comes and says, "Oh, wow. Wow, this is going to be my temple of liberation." You know, like completely different perspective, same room. And like this, we go through the world and we believe in our world. We believe strongly in it. We react to our ways of seeing the world. And meditation means to see through all of that. To see through the workings of our mind, how it creates a seeming identity, how it creates worlds which we tend to think so real. Even with the ones closest to us, sometimes the worlds seem to be so far apart, we can't communicate, we don't understand each other. It's like different worlds, although we love each other so much. And we need to see through all of that, and we see conditioning. The Buddha talked a lot about conditioning, causes and conditions which create the different worlds. And basically, that's mind. We need to understand mind. Now, whenever there is an understanding of that kind, there is a greater sense of feeling at ease with the world. Because if I understand how the world functions, I'm more at ease with it. I can do something about it. If I feel my way of looking at the world is not so helpful, I can put my attention a little bit in a different direction. I can steer my interest to go a little bit differently. Like from time to time, like we are doing here regularly, encourage thoughts like, even the person I don't like is my brother or my sister. You know, like in a way, this person is also searching for happiness, just like me. There is something which we have in common. These thoughts, they already change the perspective so much. So we use them. We use them to go towards a more open worldview. So much of that, what we are doing in meditation, is to steer our interest in areas which are helpful. And it is very helpful that to find out in meditation that there is a completely relaxed way of being in the world, where we don't create, we don't enter aversion to what is disagreeable. We don't enter clinging to what is agreeable, and we don't identify with the processes going on in ourselves. Yeah. So these are the three kinds of suffering. We find out that it is so easy, actually. It needs everywhere a looking through. I need to look through that what is, what I'm so averse to, what creates so much anger and aversion. What's the nature of that? Is it really worthwhile fighting with it, or will that make it worse? Or maybe do I have to just wait for the change? Or maybe I can enhance a positive change. I can go for a positive change using the creativity of mind instead of solidifying the problem. Same for the wonderful things that we encounter. Have you ever found that clinging to a wonderful situation has made it last any longer? No. The moment we start clinging, actually we are already not so open anymore. The best way to make it last longer is to stay relaxed. To continue with the same conditions of openness and of benevolence and so on that gave rise to this wonderful situation. So we take care rather of the conditions that give rise to something agreeable than clinging to the result. The result is only a result. And one of the most important conditions of joy is gone when we cling, because then we have fear to lose something. So already the joy is getting less when there is the fear to lose something agreeable. So rather go back to the appreciation of that which is there, knowing that it is conditioned, knowing that it is changing, and it needs support, it needs our openness, it needs our love, it needs our care, like a good relationship, needs daily care. Needs daily care to be able to continue in this good way. So here again, we see that there's nothing to be grasped at. We cannot prolong a situation by grasping at it. Sometimes when I'm in the mood, I ask the whole audience, now, let's grasp at this moment of now. It's so nice. Let's all grasp together and try that it doesn't change. Won't work. It's obvious. It's so obvious. It's so clear. No amount of grasping can stop a situation from changing. But we can encourage similar situations to arise again and again. Like if I encounter the person that I liked so much yesterday, if I encounter it today with a similar interest and a similar openness and appreciation, then the chances are that it is going again into a very nice way of being together. It also depends on other factors. Yeah, the other person, the factors around, something could have happened, which doesn't make it possible. We don't have all the factors in our hand. We only have our own mind. So meditation is much about how to use one's own mind. And to look again and again, this is now I come once more to the third kind of suffering, to look again and again if that is truly someone meditating. If there's truly someone seeing, or someone feeling the pain, feeling the discomfort, always looking inside, always looking within, I can't even find someone talking. Can you find someone listening? Have a look. Maybe I should talk that you can check whether you are listening. Can you find the one searching? So this is insight meditation. You understand? All of what I'm talking now is different ways of developing insight meditation. Insight, not only meditation. Insight is developed in three ways. It is developed through hearing, like some of you have maybe, hopefully, gained a little bit deeper insight just by listening. It's the first way, listening and studying, reading. This is the first way to develop some understanding, by taking in the instructions of the transmission of wisdom. But then comes the more important thing, and you're doing it constantly while you are listening. You're already doing it. We call it contemplation. Actually, you compare it with your own personal experience. For example, one person was shaking their head when I said, you can't prolong a situation when grasping. That person was obviously thinking that you can prolong the situation by grasping. So there was a checking with one's own experience. And they invite you to check all the Dhamma. You have to test it. And this testing, this is contemplation. You test it, you compare, you look, you see whether it concords with what you have experienced so far. And this contemplation continues also when we sit on the cushion. When we sit on the cushion, actually part of the time we spend there is not properly called meditation, but it is contemplating our life. It is contemplating our experience. When I ask you, or anybody, a teacher suggests to you, look at the impermanent nature of what is experienced. That is contemplation. You're using your intellect. You're using the capacity to understand of the intellect to see, between what was before and now, there is a definite change. This breathing in and the last breathing in, they are different in a subtle way. This is still contemplation. We are not meditating yet. Okay? We are comparing, actually, one breath to another. We are comparing our experience with the words of the teaching. We are checking, and this is good. This is the second way of developing understanding. It is to compare everything that is said with our personal experience. And then comes the point of meditation. The meditation usually starts when we have the feeling, yes, that's how it is. And then after that, there is a non-conceptual stretch where we are not comparing anymore. We are directly experiencing in a non-conceptual way just how it is. And this is what I taught you yesterday as the pause, right? It is the pause after the observation. We often say we are meditating with breathing. Actually, we are mostly contemplating breathing. There is a thinking process going along with the breathing experiences, and there is a labeling there. There is so much intellect still there. So the actual meditation starts when we don't need to do that anymore, when there's no more labeling, no more comments, no more, but just this. And then in this undescribable being, this is the real meditation. This is where the real insight comes from. That is the third form of developing understanding. It's a non-conceptual way of developing understanding, and that's the real meditation. And the three, they work together. The one through listening and studying, the one through comparing contemplating and the one through non-conceptual being. Now, non-conceptual being doesn't mean that it is non-dual being. No. It's not necessarily a non-dual being. There's a lot of understanding arising from silent meditation without labeling, but still there is a slight observing quality there. Also, this gives rise to deeper understanding. And then that liberating insight that we talk about, that comes from letting go not only into the non-conceptual dimension, but into that dimension where not even this observing activity of the mind is going on, free from that observing activity. That is at the same time being free from a subject. The subject always observes. That's what we call subject. It's the observing, the unnecessary observing activity of the mind. When that relaxes, then we are in that experience from which the deepest intuitive insight arises. And now yesterday evening and this morning, I gave you some, of course, conceptual explanations about aspects of this non-conceptual and also non-dual experience of life. And so I was talking actually about the mind of awakening. And although all of that is conceptual, these are explanations, then we can use it as a help to feel our way in to how we actually are. What are the basic functions of mind, even when free of the clinging to self and other, to subject and object. And we did it this morning, a little bit. I walked you through the five petals of the lotus, I mean the central and the four petals, yes? We went through and just a little bit connecting it with our breathing. And why it is helpful is because it brings us close to how it actually is, also for awakened beings in the awakened experience. That's helpful. And you will learn to trust your own mind, which is very important to be able to let go. Trusting your own mind that nothing will go wrong. You will not lose these very important capacities that make up life. Yes? So I promised I will go through again so that you can take notes. I will do this now. It's the same as yesterday. I usually like to start with the openness, which is the central element, the spacious, open, just being. The image of the space in which everything can manifest. Some people like this image of the space so much that they forget about the whole rest. They want to stay in space. But they space out. Yeah? It's like going somewhere where nothing can reach me. This is not how mind is. Mind is actually basically very dynamic and sensitive. And then the next good thing we need to do is then to remind ourselves of the fluidity of mind. Yes, you remember the water element. Now the water also, because of its cohesion, that everything is always connecting, then has the capacity to act as a mirror. Now the mirror is yet another example for the fluidity and unhindered manifestation. If I had a mirror in my hand, then moving the mirror or moving something in front of the mirror in a completely unhindered way always reflects what is presented in front. You know, it will show your face, then it will show yours, then it will, you know, and there is not a moment of holding on to the image that was just there before. And you don't have to make that image go away. It disappears in its own nature. It never had any substance. There is no need for recycling the mirror images somewhere, put them in a bin and then recycle them. And the same thing is with our thoughts. Our thoughts, our images, the emotions that we have, they are in the fluidity, in the continuity of experience, arising and disappearing just like images in a mirror. We didn't do anything from childhood on. As a baby, as a child, as an adult, we never had to take care to dissolve the thoughts that were present just a moment before. They do that by themselves. This image of the water, the fluidity, is also pointing to the unhindered manifestation, the unhindered continuity of the experiences of life. This is very important, to trust your own mind. Simply relax in meditation, and you can trust the next experience will come. There will be no hole there suddenly. There's no hole in experience. It continues all the time. And it has no problem with the previous experiences. They disappear, they dissolve by themselves. No one has to take care of that. No one has to take care to create that space. No one has to take care of the continuity and fluidity of appearances. And the reason for that is the next one. Huh? We are now we have been with the space and the water. We come now to the earth. And the reason that it is like this is because whatever arises has no substance, no solidity. If it had solidity, now, if something has solidity and next thing wants to take its place, it has to push it away. It has to do something. And then because it's solid, what to do with it? Maybe we have a recycling bin in our brain somewhere. But we don't. It simply dissolves. There is no solidity. And this is the empty nature, the not having a core, not having a substance in the experience, not finding something that would be the everlasting substance of a moment of anger. If you look at it more properly, if a moment of anger, if anger had substance, then it would have been there before already. It would have been stored and then has to arise and then go somewhere again and somehow always exist. That is not the way mind works. Anger comes together through different forces. These different forces of preferring one thing and disliking another and one's own pride and one's own worldview, and then the anger rises. And the moment one of these forces changes, anger is gone. It's different, changes for something else. It is a conditioned phenomenon. Conditioned phenomena are just a result of conditions. They have no substance, no solidity. As solid as it might feel, our anger might sometimes feel, especially when it is rancor, hatred, then it might feel solid like a rock. But even a rock is not solid. Depends on conditions. So you have to stimulate that again and again, again and again, always making up the same. Also, depression seems to be so solid sometimes, so solid. But it is actually generated again and again and again. And if you work with that, within one moment of experience, it can be gone. there's a the conditions are not there anymore. And this is the empty nature of all mental states, of everything, all phenomena. I quickly tell you a story about the worst depression I have encountered. It was a young lady in the beginning of the 20s, brought by her mother, and she felt dead and trying to talk with her. All my usual clever skills of, you know, kindling some interest in this and that, everything failed. Nothing. So after an hour with her, I said, okay, let's make a break. Let's, you know. And we stood up and we went towards the door. She opened the door for me and smiled at me. That was the moment where depression was not there. And that's where we started our work with each other. That one moment, and she admitted it, yes, I was not depressed. I was happy to open the door for you. And that is like, that's what I mean with, in every mental state, as solid as it might be, you will find the little thing which is different. You will find that it depends on conditions. And then, of course, immediately after having opened the door, she was back in her depressive state, but I had noticed it. And then I could reach her. And this is what you need to know, that all what we experience, all of this, it is very reliable. This is reliable like the earth. It has no substance. Temporary experiences in mind. Even if the conditions which create those experiences can be repeated and can continue for some time, but nothing is everlasting here. So we direct our attention in meditation towards that. This is like giving the sense of reliability. Wow, I can trust that. I can trust the basically open, spacious nature of mind. I can trust the continuity of experience, the unhindered experience, the empty nature. And if we were to stop here, we would have an open, spacious, fluid, and empty mind. But that's not the story of life. We need to add the next aspect. It is this finely distinguishing capacity. And this remains. Awakened beings have a top capacity of distinguishing, of knowing, of understanding, of being sensitive. So that reveals more and more. And it is this finely knowing capacity of mind that makes life so vivid and that makes every moment unique, every experience unique. This is the freshness aspect. Huh? This is the luminous, the clarity aspect of so many experiences in life. It is this aspect of our mind which is like the light bulb in a projector. When you project a film on a screen, you need light for the differences to show. Otherwise, if you don't have enough light, it's just a blur. But our mind has that capacity to see things so distinctly, so finely, and to feel them. I'm not talking about visual seeing. I'm talking about, wow, really feeling the finest differences in the way I love someone, the finest differences in whatever experience. There's so much there which we can feel. And this is the luminous capacity of mind. This is the fire, because fires, sun, stars, fire, these are all it's the light element. Here we are not talking about the warmth. One can also go a little bit elaborate on the warmth aspect, the loving aspect, which is also there. We are talking here about that luminous quality. And then, if we were to stop here with the description of awakened mind, it would be very nice already, but it would be passive, right? It would be a mind finally enjoying life, no attachment, very spacious, very open, very fluid, however, not interactive. Yeah, so we need the active side. We need to describe that. Awakened activity. And this is due to the creative aspect of mind. It is the dynamic force, which is not only on the receiving side. We not only receive in a dynamic way all the informations, we create, we form life. Actually, the world is made up by the way we perceive. And the whole story of karma and what different worlds people experience, all of that comes from the creative aspect of mind. Incredible. So here, the wind element, the wind is the, the ambassador of change, right? It's like, the wind blows, and depending on which wind is blowing, it's either a karmic wind, an emotional wind, which is blowing of any of the kinds and colors our experience, or it is a wind of no clinging, of no clinging to a self, which will then be a wind of sensitivity, of compassion, of interbeing. Yeah, it's a different wind which is blowing there. So the creative aspect of mind, that which gives rise to interactions with the world, with to communication, which gives rise to poetry, to drawings, to music, to gestures and so on, that is the creative potential of our mind. And by tuning into these five aspects, we have a very complete description of mind. We know nothing is really missing. Yeah, this is why it's so helpful. And these five facets of the same jewel of mind, these five facets, they show when the clinging becomes less, when the corresponding emotions become less. There's more awareness, there is less anger, less pride, less desire, less ambition and jealousy. Like this, the natural qualities of mind, they can show better. And you can do this by slightly reminding yourself in the meditation. You can do the normal breathing meditation. Take in the body, the overall physical experience, which is mind, which is a mental experience. And you widen this to take in all the other aspects of experience, all the thoughts, all the emotional states, all of what you can perceive of mind. And it will work much better. You will be much more relaxed if you can do this with kindness, with a very gentle attitude. Because from a judging point of view, when we breathe in and breathe out and see what's going on in our mind, we would have this kind of feeling, oh, what crap is that again, you know? So, you know, then also breathe in this judgment, you know, like accept that, and, okay, yes, make space for it. Make space, allow yourself to be fluid, that comment will also pass. It actually has no substance. If I now start fighting with my judging mind, I'm fighting against something which has no substance. It is, I can see it's already gone the moment I let it go. And this we do with everything that arises. Whatever arises, we breathe through with the understanding of these five aspects. Now, only in the beginning you have to remind yourself of these five aspects. They will become so natural to you, you will not need to name them to yourself. Because actually, seeing one of these aspects, you see the other ones as well. So you will be breathing, allowing everything to arise, and of course, allowing it to go its own way. And in that, the understanding will get deeper, that you can really trust this process. And it will also continue when you are not paying attention to the breathing. It's not dependent on the breath. The breathing is just so that we always have something to return to in case we need it, in case we are taken on a long journey by our daydreams. Okay, come back. And the breathing is spacious, the breathing is fluid, it has no substance. It's always different, it is very vivid and fresh. And it is creative. It's the wind. And the way we breathe already makes a different world. And to finish this explanation, I would like to share a wonderful bit of a biography with you. I think it was Langri Tangpa, one of these great bodhisattvas in Tibet. And he was quite old. He was in his 50s already. He was in his 50s already when he got to know the teachings on bodhicitta, on this awakened mind. And you know, 50 was an advanced age in Tibet. They didn't live so long. And he made the vow and the wish, from now on, until I die, until my last breath, may every breath be connected to bodhicitta. And when he died, he said to his disciples, my vow, my wish has been fulfilled. One of the great masters, and it's an incredible example to me, to many of us. Why not connect as many cycles of breathing to whatever means bodhicitta to you? You know, what you feel most inspired by, connected to that. You don't have to call it bodhicitta. If you want to call it love, connect it to love. If you want to connect it to generosity, connect it to that. If you call it friendship, connect it to friendship. Whatever is the quality, even, you know, like it can be simplicity, connected to that. Use your inspiration and connect every in-breath and every out-breath to that. And then you will have a fulfilled life. The more that is possible, the life will be fulfilled. And you will die happily. I mean, leave this body, huh? Since no one is really dying, you know, you will leave this body and continue happily without breathing. You have become so used to being in that quality, you don't need the breath anymore at that time.